All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Marco Malmasi. I just woke up. It's 5:30 in the morning, and I'm trying to figure out how to make my brain work. This is the Knife Talk Podcast. We are here doing the Knife Talk Podcast to help keep you company in the shop, on your commutes, help answer your questions, work through your dilemmas, share a little bit about our process, and just more than anything, just have a good time. So we appreciate you inviting us into your ear holes. That sounds weird.
No, but you know what, though? Your voice, though, is good. Your voice for, hey, baby.
Good morning.
I'm gonna bite myself in your ear holes. I'm not mad about
Sous
it.
Leisure.
I'm not mad about it. Not mad about it.
You remember that sexy French music Craig used to play?
Yeah. By the way, Craig is not with us. He's playing sexy French music in his room. He's not. He's under the weather. So Mareko and I are going to take care of this by ourselves, which I think is perfectly fine.
By the way, I haven't introduced, for people who don't know, that's right. Jeff Fader Knives. Yeah. Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives is not here.
Right.
He's not here, not feeling good. So we're going to cruise, just the two of us.
Listen to you. How you feeling, by the way?
Still a little bit under the weather.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's weird. I haven't had a cold like, it's just like a long, lame, lingering cold. It's not even like every day.
Yeah.
But it's usually in the morning. I feel like super congested and my throat's a little sore. And then by like 11 o'clock, I'm fine.
All right. There you go. Well,
get out of here.
At the end of the world.
Lose my number.
Yeah, lose my number. That's it. I'm with you. How have you been otherwise?
I've been good. I've been working on, so I got a knife back. From a customer, and the blade's great. But the handle material that I used, I never really had this experience before, but it's a mixture of some copper spacers and some stable. Actually, you were very gracious and set me up with some of that Pappy Van Winkle oak.
Oh, really?
And yeah,
that was nice of me.
That was very nice of you. And then in the spacer. So that's the main body of the handle is that oak, and then this, which you had stabilized, you aged it, stabilized it, whatever, did all the stuff. So it's good to go, and it's a great handle. But actually, I really like it a lot. But I had to smash it off with a hammer on the anvil.
Oy.
Because the spacer I used was Antler, and this is the weird part is I've used Antler before, and I haven't had any of this feedback or this problem before, but. Dude, the Antler was fluctuating dimensionally, like in a big way. The customer sent me a picture, and it looked like it was almost a 16th of an inch of like a lip all the way around. Like it shrunk that much between where I'm at and where he's at, which is in Indiana. I didn't really think Indiana was going to be that much drier than here, but. Anyways, it's an issue. And so he said it back to me to basically like grind it back down and match the spacer back up, spacer material back up and everything and basically kind of resculpt the handle, but it was a Japanese style handle, it was very simple. So anyways, it's here for like 2 or 3 days before I can even get to it. And then the fucking thing is back, like almost back to like normal. Right. I mic'd it, and the difference between the spacer and the rest of the handle material is like 16 thousandths of an inch.
Okay.
There's hardly anything. And just like, fuck. Now I don't want to. I'm like, well, now there's nothing to do. So it's good. And for a second, I was like, oh, I'll send it back.
Wait a second. So it, without you doing anything, it kind of went back to its original size?
Yeah. And so I was like,
so weird.
I was ready to send it back, but then I was like, wait a second. It's just going to fucking do it again. I was like, oh my God. fuck, I have to destroy this handle. I got to get, like, we talk about customer service and about taking care of the shit that we send out. And I'm realizing that I probably should not have used that antler. Now, antler is obviously used quite frequently in the knife making industry. But there are things that people do that I saw them as kind of aesthetic choices or stylistic choices, using museum fit ups, using like these little step downs between spacers and between different types of handle materials. But there, I think there is a thing that happens where and I think it varies from antler to antler. But where the material fluctuates in its dimensional shape, like how wide it is in any dimension, right? And those little steps in the museum fit up, or if it's like a guard to, like, say I have a bronze guard, and then I have a bronze spacer and a black G10 spacer on either side of that thin spacer, and then antler, and then another spacer. All that shit, like, there's little steps and little, like, detailed things, and a lot of it looks like a lot of fiddly, honestly, it looks like a lot of fiddly little work that people do to kind of do as a flex. But I think the reality I'm understanding now is that these are also stylistic choices that are designed with the idea that the material could fluctuate on you and dimensionally. And if everything is sculpted so that it's perfectly smooth from the guard all the way to the butt of the handle, then in time and use, or even if it's just sitting on a shelf, that antler could shrink down and get really fucked up. Or really fuck up the knife, or like just mess with things. And it, the step that he'd sent me a picture of was so much, and the copper, because it was all like ground smooth and taken up to a nice high finish, when it steps in like that, that edge of that spacer becomes actually surprisingly sharp.
I bet.
And so there's another reason I can't keep that there. So I'm just like, fuck, I had to take the whole handle off. My whole concern the whole time when I was doing it, and I haven't had this happen before, knock on wood, I'm thankful it hasn't. But there's a lot of different ways you can grind the handle off. You can cut it off. But I've found that the easiest way is just to like set the handle on the anvil and hit it with a hammer. And I just use like not a big forging hammer. I just use a ball peen. And I actually use the ball peen side to kind of like for that focused, like force distribution, like straight into the peen to help split that handle off. But every time I do that, I'm like, oh my God, I hope I don't break the tang off, because it's a hidden tang with an integral bolster. And if it breaks off, I'm going to be in a fucking tough spot.
Not if you have a welder.
Well, yeah. But if you do get in there with the welder, that welding will, especially if you're working with Damascus, that those welding temps are going to affect the way that that steel etches after you weld, if you weld a tang back on. You can weld a tang back on, but it does mess with the etch because of that heat that's put back into the steel.
I would imagine that a lot of people stabilize antler because it is a porous. I mean, when you talk about the, you know, the changing of the dimensions, I would think that there's it's because it's porous and it's like either taking on water or not. Like I think of everything about, is it taking on water or not? That's what stabilizing prevents.
Yeah, and so
I would imagine some people probably for the sake of not having to redo things, most likely stabilize the antlers, right?
Yeah, and I think that is a thing. I don't know how many or how often it's happening, because I know I know a lot of guys who just like they get the antler and they just start using it. But yeah, you're right. No, it is kind of a concern or something to consider for sure. The other problem though is like if somebody is going to say they're using like stag. And one of the appeals of stag is like all that kind of craggy texture on the outside.
Right.
You stabilize that and then you bake that fucking thing. Now you got a bunch of schmutz all up in those crevices and creases that are like part of the presentation of the sandbar stag or a stag in general. So yeah, it's tricky, but I think if you can afford to work with some stabilized material or stabilize it or whatever, because you're not preserving something like that, fucking do it. Because I tell it's going to make a huge difference for sure.
I love using walnut, and for years I've used figured walnut because it has just a kind of a tighter grain. It's got a lot more kind of character. And what I also notice is that I've made knives back in the day that I still have that I didn't stabilize, and they haven't changed at all. And I have stuff that has been stabilized that moves a little bit. And I also noticed that some walnut that's not as tightly figured holds itself together without being stabilized a lot better. When I stabilize all the wood I use, I stabilize it, or I have it stabilized.
Yeah.
And I've had really good experience with all the work we've done. Yeah. But it is weird that some things don't, you know, I've heard that, you know, a lot of figured maple doesn't need to be stabilized either.
Sure. And I think that's a great point to bring up, is that it is not a guarantee. It just helps to reduce, or is supposed to help reduce,
right,
that fluctuation, dimensional fluctuation. But I think in my work, I'm going to start, even before this happened, I've been wanting to do more kind of museum fit ups on my handles and stuff like that. Because especially the natural materials, even though they, like woods or walnuts or burls or whatever, even though they've been stabilized, they will still move on you.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm sending a knife from the Pacific Northwest down to fucking Arizona or Texas or somewhere where it's a lot drier.
Yeah, serious.
Or Indiana, for whatever reason, there's gonna be a serious difference, not only in the temperature. It's not really that. It's like the ambient moisture, the air content, between Washington and wherever the hell the knife is going.
Right, right.
Even honestly, going into some people's houses, like some people will keep their, depending on their heat source. Like we were just up at Anderson Island, which is why I missed last week, which is just cute little island in Puget Sound. Sarah's family has a cabin there on the island, and so we go up there once or twice a week, or a year, not a week. And it's electrical heat in the fucking house. And my lips started just, like, getting destroyed, cracking and getting fucked up. It was terrible. Because the electrical heat, the baseboard electrical heat, was causing the air to be so much drier. And even though I'm still in Washington, I guarantee that would have an effect on the dimension, dimensional changing of the handle material from being made in my shop versus inside a house with dry heat.
It's funny that you say that too, because I actually try to do most of my stabilizing in the winter. And a lot of that's because it's so much drier in my shop. I use my even heat to dry out the wood, but then also I can, you know, it is so dry in the winter that it really allows me to kind of make sure that I'm double sure that the wood is extra dry before I put it in the cactus juice.
Yeah.
But because especially if it's in the spring, you know, in the spring you start to see like when there's a temperature change, you can see it crawling across the concrete floor. And I try to plan out as much stabilizing in the winter as possible, just for the sake of, you know, moving it from the oven to the drying rack, from the drying rack to the stabilizing. You know, I can't stabilize that much at a time. I mean, I have two containers, but right. And I try to, you know, stagger it all out. But when it's drier, it's the better time to do the stabilizing anyway, because, you know, you're kind of killing the doubt in terms of whether or not there's a lot of moisture or not.
For sure.
So, but yeah. you know what I use when I want to kill the doubt for moisture?
I don't know what.
It's fucking even heat. You kidding me? Even heat manufactured the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to our friends at evenheat-kiln.com. And yes, 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 I do use my even heat kiln for doing stabilizing, because I can make sure that I can get on the right temperature. I use the solid state drive tap control, and I have it stabilizes on the tap control. So I do that there. So guys, go check out evenheat-shield.com. You got whatever you're doing, you're heat treating, you're getting it hard, using even heat.
Getting it bricked up.
Yeah, getting it bricked up, baby. So everything else okay otherwise?
Yeah, so yeah. Yeah, just got to make that and then get back into making some steel. I have a new design for some steel I came up with.
Huh.
Being up on the island was fun. You know, I don't know. It was cool. It was good.
Okay.
It's nice to get out of the shop every once in a while.
It is nice to get out of the shop every once in a while. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why you're sick is because you travel too much.
I think that's part of it, for sure.
Yeah, well, I understand. So we had a nice little week, got a lot of work done. But without kind of going any further, we got to talk about our friend Steve Pellegrino.
Yeah, absolutely.
On Thursday afternoon, I got a message from a friend of ours. I'm a friend of who knows Steve's family and, you know, sent a message saying, I think something's going on with Steve. After doing some research, not research, you know, people messaging me, I'm messaging them. It turns out that Steve was in a terrible car accident. And I felt as though, you know, you and I kind of talked about what we should talk about and stuff like that. And I felt like it's important to be supportive of our friend Steve Pellegrino. Talk about what happened and then, you know, give the love and support that we can. Because he's going to listen to this and we can't be, we can't be freaking out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I got a message. I got a friend of mine sent me Green Custom Fab. He's the guy. Green what? Green Money Fab. Send me the article from the Philadelphia Inquirer, and basically it kind of says what happened. So knife maker Steve Pellegrino, whose knives are beloved by some of the most acclaimed chefs, was critically injured February 19th in a car crash between the city and his home in Upper Black Eddy, Bucks County. His wife, Ray, said that she was told that his car slid over a guardrail around 2:45 a.m. on Wednesday, and he was airlifted to a trauma center with multiple skull fractures, brain bleeding, and an injury to his carotid artery, she said, adding that he was on life support. As of Friday afternoon, donations to a GoFundMe was set up to defray the medical costs had reached nearly $35,000 out of the goal of $65,000, and now it's up to 51,000. As we speak, it's up to $51,000, which is unbelievable. Pellegrino launched Pellegrino Cutlery in Philadelphia in 2017. His first foray into bladesmithing came during an apprenticeship with Portland Razor Co. in Portland, Oregon, and he moved back east in 2015. He began experimenting with knife making from outbuilding on his grandfather's land in Upper Black Eddy. His earliest knives were rough, and Steve says, they look like hamburgers. They were terrible. Pellegrino honed his knife skills there, supplying knives to the likes of Mark Vetri, Michael Solomonoff, and Maddie Matheson by 2018. Last fall, Pellegrino opened a 3,400-square-foot shop in Doylestown designed for high-volume blade production with the hopes of expanding his business beyond custom artisanal knives, for which he celebrated. I want to offer an affordable chef knife that any line cook can afford and any home cook can depend on for a lifetime, Pellegrino wrote on Instagram. Mm. He was also looking forward to starting a workshop to teach knife making. I would argue with anyone that he is one of the best American knife makers, said Pat Alfiero of Heavy Metal Sausage of Pellegrino. Other chefs through Philadelphia restaurant community were expressed shock and statements of support. And, you know, so it's really, it's sad, but at the same time, I think that, you know, he's on life support and
yeah.
I'm getting a lot of messages in regards to hearing any news. And I don't know. The answer is no. The only thing I know of talking to a few people in the medical industry without pretending like I'm a medical person at all is that, you know, being on life support is whatever he's on, whatever machines and medicine he's on is keeping him alive. And the good thing is he's very young. Everybody told me he's young and strong, which is very helpful. And hopefully what happens is as he, you know, it's like any kind of injury, it takes a while to, look at Craig. Craig's, it takes him a while to get out of bed sometimes, and it's like anybody else. You know, some of these things take a while. So it's only been 5 days. Hopefully, get some that youth and strength that he has, some healing power and that positive mind. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, as he starts to heal, hopefully they can gauge whether or not certain machinery can be or certain medical life-saving products can be, weaned off. And hopefully he gets a full recovery. That's what we're hoping for.
The virility of a young man.
Ah, dude. You want to talk about a guy who knows what the fuck's up. I asked him last time he saw him, dude is swole. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Dude is fit as fuck. Super handsome, swole dude. He's always dressed to the nines.
Are you kidding me?
He looks sharp even when he's in shop clothes.
I swear to God. He's a model. It's like unbelievable. So the dude is like, I mean, he is swole. So at one point I'm looking at him and I mean, he's not shorter than me. And he's, you know, I'm looking at him like, will you like lift, dude? And he goes, yeah, he set up a gym in his garage or something. And he's like, he's going all chesty. He's chesty as fuck. So we're hoping for a speedy recovery. And the great thing is, you know, we talk about the social media a lot and we talk about the good and the bad, but, you know, when Will Shear, who set up our friend Will Shear, set up a GoFundMe for his wife and for Steve. Because it's, you know, it ain't going to be, you know, taking a helicopter ride to the, you know, in whatever. This ain't going to be cheap. No. So as soon as Will started posting, we put it on full blast and put it on Knife Talk. And what I was amazed was looking at the analytics is how amazing the knife making community is, because it was shit.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Aired like 48 times. There was like 380 external taps. You know, knife makers got involved, and it was really, really special to see people coming around Steve and, you know, being very helpful towards him, you know?
Yeah. I can't believe, Steve, I'm talking to you now right now.
Yeah.
Steve, how have you never talked to me about being up in the Pacific Northwest and that you got your start in knife making and forging in Oregon? What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, I had him on full blast,
bro.
I had him on full blast, and we talked about it. I think that Craig had him on early in the back episodes of Knife Talk.
Okay, but one other thing, it sounds like the onus is on me.
I didn't mean it that way. One thing, if we're going to talk to Steve now, I'm going to break your balls, Steve. When you're listening to this, I want you to know something. Subway for you. I mean, we got mass transit from now on. I mean, this ain't the first time. It went 3 years ago. You know, a branch fell into his car, for Christ's sakes. Couldn't move his neck for a while. So we're speaking to you, Steve, from the future, from the past. And we want you to know from now on, public transit. You know what I'm saying? You're moving to the city or something. Because, I mean, it ain't working. We got to figure this something out or take a bus or I don't know.
Uber,
something. Jesus Christ. But we're sending all of our love and support towards Steve and his family and Ray sitting by his side. And he's our guy. We love this guy.
Thank
and
you,
he's just actually, you know, I was talking to our friend Tim Musick over at JB Prince. And that's the first time you and I met Steve.
Yeah.
You had an event. This is awesome. This is a great story. We should talk about this story. The story is fucking awesome.
Let's go.
So this is at the time when you were in Connecticut, and you sent me a message saying, I got an event. I got to speak at J.B. Prince. I'm like, oh, great. I love J.B. Prince. J.B. Prince is the number one restaurant supply, not restaurant supply, but like cooking utensil tool store for the professional in New York, but considered one of the best. I mean, they are legitimately consider the highest level. And you said, oh, you know, you want to come with me. And you came to the shop. That's the time where you showed me how to do how you do serrated knives.
Right.
We took the train into the city. We went to J.B. Prince. Tony met us down there. We hung out with actually, that's where we also – I horned my way into an article – with you, and we did something with our main man,
Tim,
and we did for the Michelin guy.
Yeah,
and then you had your first ever. Pardon me.
Is it the writer was Josh, right?
No, it wasn't like Josh. It was Jake. Jake's living in Mexico.
Old man. Jimmy John James?
Yeah, Jimmy John James. And then that was your first chance. That was the first time you ever did a meet and greet, but also like talking about knife making.
Right.
You remember that?
I do. I feel like it was not very well polished, and it was possibly a little bit painful for people.
It wasn't painful for people, except for, I'll tell you the funniest part.
All right, let's hear it.
The funniest part was you're doing your thing, and there weren't that many people there. I don't mean, nobody's promoting any of this shit anyway. But Steve came. That was the first time we met Steve. Yeah. And Steve came. And then there was this one time you were talking. And you were like being so helpful. And people were really interested. And the people who were there were asking questions. And you were talking. And it was great. The best part was, the funniest part to me was, you said fuck or shit or something like that. And there was a little child there. And you turned to the kid and the mother and said, oh, I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to do that. Something like that. And that to me was the funniest part of the whole thing. You just let loose in front of this kid. Gave it to him. Yeah. I mean, you didn't give it to him, but you were free with your words.
I have a bad habit.
I was like, oh, this is great. I swear to God, all I can think of is just like, oh man, I was so happy. I was so happy. You just cursed in front of that kid. Taught him. All of a sudden, this child learns these new words from America's greatest knife maker. It's great. I think it's important. So we're with you, Steve. We're going to be, so if you're listening to this and you want to have any more information, I mean, obviously we only know whatever's been put out there, but there is a GoFundMe in the bio of this podcast. That if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, where that's where you send us your questions, your feedback, and whatever you want, you can go there. But in the bio is a link directly to the GoFundMe that's going for Steve. And like I said, he's our guy, gives you the shirt off your back. There is nobody, I've eaten steak all over the place. Nobody has ever cooked a better steak than Steve Pellegrino. Am I wrong?
No, you're not
wrong. He's unbelievable. I mean, God knows how to cook.
But that's probably what he was actually doing in New York. He was there to get steak. And then he happened to swing by and gift us with his presence.
He. I don't think so. I think he came directly to meet you. That's what I think. No, I'm 100% sure. I mean, Philadelphia isn't that far from New York. Okay. I think he wanted to meet you. And I know that created a good relationship with J.B. Prince. And, you know, look, these guys, I mean, gives you the shirt off your back. I mean, he came to one of my hammer-ins with these, like, he must have spent like $300, $400 on these steaks. And he cooked these steaks at the shop, and they were unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then he cooked these unbelievable steaks over for family meal at Maker Camp. Guy gives you the. He showed up he surprised me by taking one of my classes and not telling me. He came down to the Center for Metal Arts.
Oh.
A first class guy, give you the shirt off your back. Whatever you can do to support our guy, do it. That's it. We're with him.
I got to tell you, I know what you're saying, and I love that you're saying it this way. But you keep saying, he'll give you this shirt off your back. So I just keep imagining him saying, take your fucking shirt off. Now put it back on.
I will give you the shirt off your own back. That's what I'm going to give you. And Steve will give you the shirt off your back too. I mean, who ain't going to do that? Here you go. Here's the shirt off your own back. So with that said, let's cheer some. Steve, we're going to send you some good vibes. We're going to teach you some things. And we're going to tell some jokes. And we're going to get on with this motherfucker. You know, so blah blah blah. This next, we're going to do some questions, but before we do that, if you're like us and you hand sand, you need the best. So what you need is you need Endasi USA RhinoWet. RhinoWet is the best. Get the 220. At Fader Knives, we love the 220, the 400, and the 800. And if you go to TexasFairSupply.com and you put in the promo code KnifeTalk10, you can Get whatever you want over there at Texas Ferry Supply, and you get 10% off with Knife Talk 10. So get yourself some of that in DOS USA Rhino-Wet. Stop playing and go to TexasFerrySupply.com.
And right. To follow that up, we actually got a question from Speedster Stoves.
Let's do it.
He says, I got a serious question, probably best answered by Jeff. This Uh-oh. Question jumped into my head while I was at a shopping center on holiday here in Cape Town. I know, showing off. A serious question, though. There are miles and miles of satin stainless steel handrails here. They can't be hand sanding all that shit. And if they don't, is there something we can borrow for knives? So how are they satin finishing all these stainless rails?
Okay. Well, number one, the rails that he's talking about most likely are like inch and a half stainless steel tubing and round. And then they'll, you know, that's a standard inch and a half. I think inch and a half, inch and three quarters, inch and a half, something like that. And then you buy it in long stretches, and then you have what's called a stroke sander. They're not sanding it all the way. I mean, if it's round tubing handrail, they're not going from top to bottom. They're going all the way around. So they have these machines called stroke sanders, which we used to use, and it's just like a giant. You have to imagine like a giant 2x72 grinder, and the belt goes down past the platen and then under your bottom wheel. There's a long stretch between the driving wheel and then your platen. So what you'll do is you'll have like a couple wheels. You'll put your tubing on those wheels, and then you'll actually take a block of wood and push down on the bottom of your slack, and then it'll start to roll, and then they're able to roll and put a satin finish on all the way around, but like that. It's really pretty quick. And then they also have other like grinders that have these flexible belts, and then they can kind of do that on the job site. But it's all prepared ahead of time. And actually, frankly, I learned about that. I used to do that all the time because we used to do elevator rails and bathroom rails and rails, and we used to do all sorts of satin finish on stainless steel. And I learned from that job what I used to do. And here's a knife trick. I'll take on my set 2x72, I'll take the platen off, and then I'll take a little block of wood. And then what we would do is for the stroke sanding belts, when we were pushing down from behind, we would take a block of wood, put a piece of Scotch-Brite on one side and cover it in blue tape, and then you can push down on the back of the belt to engage the belt into your material. And then if it's on wheels, the steel is rolling. So I do that actually with knife making. I'll make a little block of wood with some Scotch-Brite and blue tape, put the slack belt on, and then I'll actually push from behind the belt to engage in a spot that I'm having a hard time getting the belt into, and I'll actually use that same strategy for finishing. Usually it's like it's usually for like the finishing off the end of a knife, or there's a one spot that I can't get to and I need to kind of, you know, put a little bit of pressure, but not enough pressure that it's the whole thing, and I want a little support in one spot.
Okay.
So there's your answer.
All right. I will add probably one small detail.
Go ahead.
Is that the steel, the stainless steel that these handrails are made from, you sure shit, I hope, are not making your knives from.
Oh, he don't make knives.
It's gonna be
Speech yourselves. I mean, making knives.
And it's gonna be so much. That handrail steel is gonna be so much softer, even though it is also stainless. There are various grades of stainless steel, and so finishing work on that much surface is gonna be a lot faster than a super hard, high quality blade that's been heat treated out of your even heat kiln, and getting that damn thing finished. So,
yeah, I hate
it. A little bit of apples and oranges too.
Yeah, I hated finishing steel. I was in a finishing shop for too many years, but it helped me. It helped me when it came down to finishing steel in the shop, and I actually used a lot more of the shop finishing when I was in the finishing business.
Yeah.
I use a lot more of that than I do anything I learned from YouTube. So, you know, experience is underrated. You know what I'm saying?
Sir.
With that said, let's go to we have an anonymous dilemma. And I made this anonymous because I felt like this guy don't need, you know, a ton of, you know, armchair quarterbacks reaching into his DMs to tell him what's what. So I've made it anonymous, my guy. I'm with you. Hey, I have a dilemma for you. I've been getting asked a fair bit to sell knives to friends, families, and coworkers, etc. I'm flattered, and I would love to give them some money for the things that I've been making. I ordered an even heat from Maritime Knife Supply so I can do accurate heat treating. If I'm going to sell, at least that's the least I can do. My lovely wife asked our home insurance provider if we need any extra insurance for my new tool. The insurance people lost their minds, told us our house has no insurance, we are too risky to insure, and they need, and that we're going to need a new provider. Asked for a bunch of information, locations, pictures, voltage, electrical inspections. After explaining and showing what I'm doing, they have decided to continue our coverage. But if I sell anything, I need an additional $1,000 commercial policy on top of my regular policy. Now I'm turning my hobby into a business, and I feel obligated to make knives, start a website, and get after it, get after making it succeed. Now what? So I actually kind of talk. I have some more to add when we get to that point.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think if you are doing this work as a hobby, I think at first it does feel like maybe right off the top you need extra insurance, especially if you know you have a fire at your house, right? You want to be out of pocket for that. But you know if we think about it, there are a lot of appliances in our homes already. Our oven is one thing in particular, but honestly, even a dryer for doing your laundry is extremely dangerous along with the heating system. Are there potential issues, and there are electrical fires happen all the fucking time.
Right.
Lint fires though in dryers are actually a real fucking problem because people think that's a little bit of lint. But the problem is that lint catches fire so fucking fast.
But a regular homeowner's insurance would kind of cover that.
Right. So, but okay. So that I would want to go in and look at my insurance coverage because there are also plenty of people who do shit in their homes, like a weekend warrior cutting off a bolt using an angle grinder that he got from the hardware store, whatever the fuck. But anyways, that's going to throw sparks. Does your insurance cover that if it sets a fucking your house on fire? It's got to be somewhere in there. Whether it does or not. And I would try to do some work to see if that's the deal. Because if this is a thing, it's only a side hustle. It's only a hobby, not even a side hustle. It's just something you have extra tools or equipment for that you do on the side. I would try to see what your homeowner's insurance covers in regards to accidental damages because you're fucking around in your garage and weekend worrying.
He's already brought it to their attention and they're already saying that this is not covered.
I guess I'm also talking to people out there who maybe haven't done this yet though.
Oh dude, three quarters of our listeners right now are like, you're supposed to call your insurance company. Am I supposed to call my insurance company? So I said to him, well, can't you tell them it's a hobby? And this is what he said. And that's exactly what I did. But now my back's against the wall. I can't advertise knives that are available on my social media, etc. They basically said that if anything happens, they'll investigate if I was selling them. If they determine that it was indeed, if I was indeed selling them, they'll void my coverage.
Whoa.
So then I asked him, maybe you should talk to
their insurance probably isn't for it as a business.
Well, here's the problem.
Of some sort.
Let's just also talk about the fact that insurance companies are not there to really help you.
They're not limit
their liability. You know, yeah. I mean, look at all what's happened with the fires in California. All these companies, you know, canceled people's insurance before these fires happen, and then people aren't, you know, the insurance companies, the people paying their homeowners insurance aren't covering those people down in the Carolinas who got involved with that flood.
Right.
So let's just be very, very clear that insurance companies are not there for you. They're there to limit their own.
It's a hoax.
It's not a hoax, but I mean, they're trying to limit how much they have. They're trying to cover their own asses, and then they're making it very hard for you. So what I asked him was, I said, you could talk to an accountant. And maybe you can deduct it, including some of your mortgage. Now, you know, now you're getting into, you know, when you start to buy an even heat or a kiln in general, I mean, it is an investment in terms of your energy, is your energy, your time and energy too. You know, it's not like, you know, I mean, you're obviously making them not just for, you know, you're obviously making them for somebody else too. You're mm-hmm. making, you know, buying an even heat and then just like, I'm only going to make knives for myself. I mean, that's like, you know. And then so I asked him about the $1,000 in coverage, and I said, is the extra $1,000, is it a month or a year? And he says it's a year. $1,000 per year, which isn't cheap, but it isn't really a huge problem. My issue is that it turns my hobby that I enjoy into a second job obligation, self-inflicted ADD, and a ridiculously large drive to succeed at everything I do. And I'll be doing everything I can to make my knife gig successful. And I've only been at it for a little over a year, and I'm still in the honeymoon phase, I'm sure. I make good money as a mechanic, and I don't need a second job. It's just an awesome hobby that can pay for itself. So my first opinion is the crazy part is I know that if you get a shop, you're going to have to get insurance. Like any place you rent space from, most landlords will say you need to be insured. Right. And I remember when we had to get insurance, it was hard. And it was hard because the funny part was the insurance companies, they don't, when you were saying that, you know, people use a grinder and a spark and stuff, and most of these insurance companies have really no contractor, I would think, contracting experience. So they don't really know any of the ins and outs of this stuff, to the point where I had an insurance company think that we're just like walking around with knives in our teeth and juggling knives like pirates, you know, and they had no idea that it really wasn't.
They just got done watching Peter Pan. So
yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is like, we're like some sort of, you know, we're like LARPing or I don't know what the fuck they thought, but it was a problem. And we had to get a lot of language off our website because we were having a real hard time getting insurance. The most important thing is you're either locked in or you're not locked in. $1,000 a year is not the end of the world. I think that obviously it sucks because you have to pay it, and there's a very good chance, let's say you pay the insurance premium or for this new policy and you do everything right and you're safe and you're careful and you do all this, that, and the other thing. There's still obligations that, you know, these motherfuckers could squeeze out of too. So it's either you take it on the chin. What I would suggest is getting an accountant involved. Mm-hmm. And then an accountant might help you figure out ways in which, you know, if you're getting an insurance policy for this side business, you might be able to like deduct a lot more. You know, you create a business, man, it sounds like you don't want to. You create a business and then you can have a lot more deductions, and then maybe you can even deduct some of your mortgage. That would be a point of me. I, you know, it's a tough one because obviously you shouldn't have to call the insurance company every 5 minutes. But at the same time, God forbid something happens, and let's say something happens that is the opposite of, you know, the kiln, and then they say, well, we had a kiln in the shop, and maybe it's a tough spot. But what do you think?
I mean, I'd be curious. Like, I feel like I know ceramicists who, as a hobby, make ceramics.
Right.
Out of their fucking garage. Like, what? There honestly is zero difference between the kilns used for ceramics and used for knife, like heat treating knives.
There's a very good chance they're not calling up their insurance company.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean, you know, there's also like, I don't know if you know this, but in New York, if you have a trampoline in your backyard.
Oh my God. Yeah.
If an insurance company sees it, they void your home insurance. And that's one of the craziest things. I see them all the time, and I'm just like, if any type of trampolines in New York, and I mean, it was a number of years ago, I'm just like, don't get it. My kid wanted a trampoline. I'm just like, no, fuck you. You pay. Are you kidding me? I'm gonna get a trampoline. Are you crazy? Are you gonna help me pay the new insurance policy? Forget it.
Go to the park, kid.
Yeah, go to the park. Go jump. Yeah, there's some soft grass over there. Yeah. I bet you can jump pretty good on that. It's a situation. And I think the hardest part is the fact that you have to juggle between what's right for you and your family, and then dealing with these, you know, scumbags who just don't care about your hobbies. They just don't want to pay you when something bad happens.
Yeah,
they want your money. They don't want your monthly.
And then they don't want to have to give anything back when you, you know, when you need to claim any claims.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
But my, ultimately my opinion is you got to lock in or you're either locked in or you're not locked in. So if this is something you don't want to do, then you got to get rid of it. This is something, I mean, you're on the worst part is now you're under you're under the scrutiny of the insurance company.
Sure.
That's the worst part. Like now it's just like, you know, if you decide you're going to keep it and use it and they're watching your social media, then it's a fucking mess. It's a mess.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it too, if it is $1,000, a premium or
right.
a year or whatever, that's like $200 knives.
Yeah. But now he feels obligated. Now he feels obligated to cough it up.
Right.
And then all of a sudden now you're in business.
Sure.
And I feel like that's not what he wanted.
Yeah.
You know, so just don't tell him about the forge and the buffer and maybe we're at a point now where you don't, I mean, I don't want to give the advice of don't tell your insurance company everything, but like, you know, these things have a way of turning into more than they actually need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, I didn't think we helped them, but my opinion is lock in or don't lock in. Lock in or don't lock in. It's like, you know, if you're in it now, you're in it. Or just give it up and, you know, don't worry about it.
Yeah. No, it's a tough one. But, yeah, you're right. You got to lock. You got to figure it out. You're either doing it or you're not. I do think that it does. It seems like he's, like, really overwhelmed. But the reality is, like, that $1,000 isn't really, like, a lot, especially over an entire year.
No,
and if you can make $200 knives within a year, then you're at least that's covered.
Yeah, but I mean, he's like, you know, I think it's souring the whole thing. I mean, that's the whole point. A lot of people want to make their hobby into they don't necessarily want to make their hobby into their business.
Yeah,
and it's just like the obligation of having to sell four knives just to kind of cover this thing is probably weighing on him.
When do you think there's going to be a point in the history of our world where like there's going to be more transparency about these fucking businesses like insurance companies that really are just they just take your fucking hard-earned money,
right,
give you this false sense of security, and then you get fucking hurt or sick or something happens to your house and they're like sorry, in our underwriting it says this specifically that you can go fuck yourself.
Well, that happens. Here's something that happened to me was I was getting a procedure done years ago, and it was approved through my wife's insurance, you know, policy through the hospital she works at. Well, there was some weird technicality because some notes or some records went from one, you know, business to another, and then the insurance company decided to not cover that thing that they said that they would. Like we would have had to do extra research to find out exactly what was covered. And it was like, we fought for a long time because you're just like, you said you were covered and now you're saying we're not covered after the thing. And now we're on the hook for all this. That's bullshit. So it's like, these are companies run by people and they're trying to be, you know, they're trying to squeeze their way out of their culpability and liability. And it's like, this isn't insurance talk, but it's like, the answer is never. I mean, we're always going to have people who are going to try to get out of their obligations, and nobody's truly reasonable, and everything is in black and white, and we're going to find that we live in a gray area and gray world, and we're not going to be able to deal like normal people. That's it. But at the same time, it's like, cover your ass. I mean, you know, also, don't make your wife mad at you. That's over a fucking kiln. That's like some... when he said my lovely wife, I'm like, I'm right now I'm kind of putting a lot of spin on that one. Lovely wife. You're mad at her. You're probably mad at her for saying anything, but you know, at the same time it's like, you know, look, she's gotta, you know, you gotta protect your shit, you know. With that said, before we get on to it, we have questions, we have feedback, and especially feedback I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
I want to talk about our friends at Maritime Knife Supply, your one-stop shop for knife makers, belts, steel, a handle material, tools, forges, kilns, heat treating ovens, and more. And they have all the Rhino Stick, the Rhino Wet, all that stuff. They have all sorts of great material. They have awesome 1080 hex bar, which is dynamite for integrals. That's what I'm using for integrals. It's really, really great starting stock for integrals. And if you go to maritimeknifesupply.com and then you buy a 10-pack of abrasive belts, you get 10% off your order because Lawrence is the man. So go to maritimeknifesupply.com. And if you're going to get that 10-pack of abrasive belts, get the Norton Razor Star Yellow 36 belts. You're welcome. Many thanks to our friends at Maritime Knife Supply. Lawrence Lake is the man. And yeah, he's the man. He sent me a raincoat. My man sent me a raincoat. Yeah, and a headlamp. I was psyched. It was one of them headlamps that's like a, it's got like a LED strip. I look like Cyclops from the X-Men when I wear it. It's fucking awesome. So I love it. So my man, Lawrence Lake, you are the man.
Can I ask for some clarity?
Sure.
About the belts. Is it, I can never remember. You get 9 and the 10th one is free? Or
well,
buy 10
I mean,
and then he cuts out the cost of...
He gives you 10% off on the 10 pack. So
on
like
the 10 pack, but not the whole order. It's just the pack.
No, on the 10 pack of abrasive belts. Okay. Here's the thing, and we've talked about Lawrence before, and Lawrence is just like, I'll give you a promo code, but I'm giving you the best prices possible. I have to raise the prices in general. Yep. So, and also with what's going on, he's trying to figure everything out with shipping to the United States, and definitely support our guy. He is the man. There's nobody who is more supportive of the knife making community than Lawrence Lake, so definitely give him a support.
Yeah.
I have some feedback I wanted to read to you because I thought there was a couple of them. Last week we were talking about bricked up. Everybody's been bricked up, and I said, no, this is something. One of us was talking about how dick and balls heavy this episode was, and I was like, though there go our female listeners. And you said, well, Joyce Cuddy's listening. And I'm like, she ain't listening. Well, I made a huge mistake. Joyce Cuddy is listening. So Cuddy
watches.
She was listening. She says, LOL, I am listening. Y'all keep your bricks to yourself, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So Cuddy, we're with you. Joyce Cuddy, we are keeping our bricks to ourselves. Here's another one from Speedster Stoves. He said, I thought I'd I would send a message with thanks. They went out for Chinese food, for Chinese dumpling making lessons for Christmas. And then when we went, it was cool, but the girl gave me the bluntest knife to try to a small dice, some carrots, some cabbage, and all that stuff. It was so bad that I squashed the spring onion flat before hitting the chopping board with a thunk. I had a fleeting thought of saying something when in my head I heard Jeff say, "Don't be that guy." Let it pass. Yeah, don't be that guy.
Oh, you're in people's heads now.
Well, don't be that guy. Be that guy is, I'll take, if I'm in your head saying don't be that guy, that I'll take that. Leave it alone. Yeah. Don't be that guy. Leave it alone. I'm with you. Don't
blame
make a
the
scene.
Insurance. They probably actually, for classes, they're like, you can't have any sharp knives in the class.
Oh, yeah, you got to tear it with your teeth and spit it off It's funny because, you know, we talk about sharpening knives a lot.
Yeah.
And I constantly get chefs come into my shop. I had a chef come into my shop with one of my old knives that I made him like 7 or 8 years ago. Good dude. Mm-hmm. He came by and he's just like, I wonder if you could tune this up for me. And I looked at it and I was like, Jesus Christ. There were scratches on it that he must have held it flat on the stone. Man. I mean, it was like fucking bananas. He beat the brakes off this knife. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. But so I sharpened it up and I just looked at him and I said, you tore this up. And he goes, and the funniest part is he said, he's like, I feel like I'm at the dentist. He's like, dentist because if the dentist asks you if you flossed or not and you say, no, of course, yes, I've flossed, of course. And the dentist always knows. He looks at you around, he's like, you didn't floss, you stupid ass. And he's like, I feel like I'm at the dentist because I know I could lie to you, but it's just like, what's the point? So that was really funny. So, you know, don't be that guy. Funny. Yeah, there's still, you know, I'm still getting a lot of messages for people who do not know how to sharp. I was on a podcast this week and this woman was asking me about knife sharpeners, pull through knife sharpeners. It was just like, just stay away from them. You got to stay away from them. And there's still this real misunderstanding of blade geometry and profile and how it reacts with the edge and how the edge and the profile are different in the thickness of the spine and the distance to the spine to the edge. And there's so much more to sharpening than just like just set it to 25 degrees and go. You know? You want anything to add? No?
No.
Keep going?
Well, I got what podcast were you on?
I was on let me look it up. It was Food, Farms, and Chefs, which ended up going on the radio in New York. So I was psyched about that. So it was like a little
syndicated.
Piece. Well, I mean, this is, I mean, let's face it, we get more viewers here, we get more listeners here than
the Food, you Farms, and Chefs.
I mean, peace and love, peace and love, peace and love. But I mean, it's like, come on. We got the number one knife related podcast on this German infested planet.
Oh, yeah.
Whether you like it or not.
Did you post that thing the other day?
Oh, yes.
Craig? Yeah,
no, I did. We got a message. I got an email from this company, and it said that we were on their list podcasts, and they listed the 60 best Monday morning podcasts.
Right.
Of the six, so 60 of the top, you know, the top rated 60 podcasts that launch on Mondays, and Knife Talk came in number 10 behind Bill Burr and all these other guys, which I thought was cool. Now, part of me is just like, it's some bullshit, but at the same time, I'm like, I sent it to Craig, and Craig says, we'll take it. So we are number 10 in the top. We're the top 10 in all of podcasts on a Monday.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Unsolicited ratings.
Unsolicited ratings. That's right. That's unsolicited ratings. So here's the next. Oh, did you have anything to add about sharpening or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of misunderstanding about, even from, like, professionals. Like, it's just so many people who think they know, but they don't.
No.
And it's a lot of it comes from, this is what my mentor taught me, or this is my grandpa taught me. I was like, sorry. Peepaw didn't know what the fuck he was talking about.
Peepaw?
You never heard Peepaw for grandpa?
Who's Peepaw? You have a you call your grandpa Peepaw?
No, I was trying to scrape my brain for a funny way to call somebody grandpa.
I love Peepaw.
Peepaw.
I love Peepaw.
Peepaw and Meemaw.
Yeah, Peepaw and Meemaw. I never heard that before, but fine. Fine. The weirdest part is sometimes I even think, now I'm not going to take shots at like knife reviewers, but now I'm going to take shots at knife reviewers.
Okay.
I'm going to take some shots at knife reviewers. There's a lot of internet and Instagram knife reviewers. Mm,
there's a couple guys that annoy the shit out of me.
Okay. Now we have Steve. This one's for you, my guy. We're going to get shitty right now. Cheer up, by our guy, Steve. I don't think if you've never made a knife, I don't think you're allowed to be a knife reviewer. I don't think if you haven't made 10 knives, you should be a knife reviewer. I don't believe that if you've never been in a shop that you don't understand tools, you don't understand how things work, I don't think you should be a knife reviewer. How's that sound?
Hmm. I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay, let's talk about it.
They're not reviewing from the maker's standpoint, they're reviewing from the user's standpoint.
I know, but I hear some things. Here's the problem. I hear some things, and they're using wording and terminology
that's
moronic.
Different. They shouldn't.
Well,
be
it's not. If
they
you
don't know
knew
what the fuck they're saying,
if you understood heat treatment, if you understood what is the basic parts of it, if you understood steel at the basic, easy to understand parts of it, then you'll have better words to use when reviewing or describing a knife. If you say weird words, like, you know, I only like this. If you use weird words that are not like based off of truth, I'm out. Yeah. I can't count on one. I can't listen to one thing you say.
I agree. So I think it's, I think it's the verbiage. They should describe their feelings about different knives based on shit they actually understand, which is probably just from the user standpoint. So how it cuts, how it feels when it cuts, all this kind of shit. But don't start talking about metallurgy.
Right.
Don't start talking about sharpening.
Right.
Especially you don't know how to fucking sharpen a knife properly.
Right. Right.
Don't talk about the chemistry of the steel. Don't talk about
shit. Here's what happens.
Yeah.
These guys start to get very romantic, and they start to use words, and they start to tip. If you're reviewing a knife, say, I like this knife because it feels good in my hand, or it cuts this way, or food release this, and sure. It feels really comfortable and it's light, because when you start to kind of tip your toe into the knife-making process, I'm out. Like, everything is now completely rejected.
Yeah.
All the words you say, because I feel as though if you really want to review a knife, you have to understand how they're made. And if you don't understand how they're made, it's the same thing with restaurant review. The restaurant review these days, the food review, is so brain dead. And the way they talk about food, and they say, oh, I like the crisp. I like the, oh, this is good flavor profiles. They're using words that they've either never cooked before, or don't have an understanding of how things are supposed to be. And I feel as though it's just like, it drives me crazy, because all of a sudden everybody's an expert. I see some of these knife reviewers, and God bless you. If this is your move, this is your move. But when you start to like behave as if you understand the knife making process, I'm out.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time they got to be just regurgitating what the manufacturer has said about the heat treat and the chemistry of the steel and all that kind of shit. Because I feel like that's all, and because they don't really know, that's all they have to work with. So they're just spitting it right back out, whatever
right.
the company says.
Right. And it's, I think it's this, like, maybe it's for me, it's this concept that you're in a position of expertise based off of a limited vocabulary. And I feel as though it just drives me. There's one guy, he sits in this like a gamer's chair. And he got them gauges in his ears, and he got them, you know, the guy's like the cool guy. I'm not going to say too much more. And when he puts his hands together where his fingers are touching, and he's talking about the knife making process,
oh my God. Like,
get the fuck off this. I want to kick that chair out from under you. I want to kick that chair out from under you. I want to throw you. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to be. Your internet is revoked. Because the problem is that other people, and I got no problem with people having an opinion, but I do have a problem with it when it gets repeated back and I hear it and I'm just like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Because a lot of these professional chefs, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about either.
For sure.
I mean, God bless David Chang for what he's done in the restaurant industry. He did one episode of his podcast where he's talking about a knife, and it was like, it was so hard to listen to.
Oh boy.
And it was like I erased all my positive opinions about him just because he was talking about knife making.
Yeah.
And I was just like, bro, please. And I even sent them a DM, the DM. I said, look, I don't know if I was smart. I don't do this shit anymore because it never works. But I was just like, listen, I'd be happy to kind of explain the basics in an understanding way of knife making and heat treatment and what does what and what does this and what does that. And you can have a better understanding of what, you know, what it is, because otherwise you're saying words that aren't even used and then people are repeating it. And then all of a sudden you got these dorks in their gamers chairs with their fingers, you know, like pushing together like they're going to conquer the world, and then they know everything.
Right. Buzzwords, so that right? That's the term
for
this shit.
God, buzzwords. Oh, the crisp. Well, on this pizza, look at the crisp. Oh, give me a break. I hate all that. So here's another good one. This is a really good one. This is from Ian Ronald. Ian Ronald is an awesome guy. He is in Australia. I think he works for Gamaco. He's awesome. And he had these points about hardness testing, about hardness testers. And he just sent some hardness tester points that I thought would be interesting to talk about. He goes, when you're using a tester, testers need to be flat, parallel surfaces. Testing on bevels give false readings. That's
okay. So
when he's testing a knife,
right? So it's not the actual physical tester; it's the piece, the sample that's being
tested. Well, I think it's everything about hardness testing in general.
Okay,
so when you're testing a knife, it needs to be flat with parallel surfaces. Testing on bevels give false readings.
Sure.
Testing near the spine of a differential hardened knife or knives with soft cladding will give soft readings. Should be obvious, but customers complaining that their knives tested soft above hormone lines says otherwise. Mm-hmm. And testing different spots on the blade can often give you variations of up to 1 to 2 Rockwell. If someone is quoting HRC levels with a decimal place, it's probably claiming more accuracy than the machine is calibrated to guarantee. Mm-hmm. I thought those were pretty interesting points.
That's all 100% fair. I agree. You will definitely get more accurate readings on parallel surfaces. I think there's a lot of ABS guys, if they're doing Rockwell hardness testing, they will actually, just below the Ricasso, the first part of the tang is usually still just basically perfectly flat there. And they will do a few test spots in that area that is going to be basically hidden from visibility, but to make sure that they're accurately hitting the hardness that they want in that piece. Another way to do that is just to have a sample piece that you put it through the heat treating process, all that stuff, and then you can punch that motherfucker wherever you want, and then as long as you're heat treating the same kind of steel and you're going through and doing all the same shit, you should get, if not exactly the same, very similar results or response in the heat treating process. But if that's only if you have the access to the Rockwell hardness tester. I think, we're talking about buzzwords. Rockwell hardness is another fucking buzzword that it's an easy thing to reference, and I've talked about this before. But it's not the end-all be-all about the actual quality of the thing. Some people will say, well, if it's handmade, what's the Rockwell hardness? And if it's not the right number for that person, they're going to think it's fucking garbage. But the reality is, like, just because it's super high or just because it's low, it doesn't mean it's either really great or really shitty. There's a lot of things that go into determining the hardness of a steel, especially what the fuck it's actually going to be used for in the first place, but also how you get there.
I agree. Hardness is a weird one because, like, every once in a while you'll get someone who some guy sent me a message saying, "What's the hardness on your K-tip?" And I give I'll tell him.
It's about 3 bricks.
At the same time, part of me, what'd you say? I missed your step in your joke.
It's about 3 bricks.
Hey, baby. yeah. So my knives are bricked up. I think that's what people should start to say when they say, "How hard's your knife?" "Oh, my shit is bricked up." So I'm fucking hard as hell. that is the best. That is literally the best. That is the best answer. "Oh, my shit is bricked up." Would be the best thing to say to someone. That would be the best.
Yes.
Good job. That would be the fucking best.
Wait,
but then the problem is then you have to go back and forth in the DMs. I refuse to do it.
Yeah.
Speaking of...
a couple episodes ago who brought that whole bricked up thing?
Oh, it was last episode. It was one of the pranks that we got sent in. Oh. The guy had been given... they slipped him Chinese Viagra crushed up, and he was on his bicycle bricked up. So all bricked up. I couldn't stop laughing. It's hilarious. And you know the funny thing is, I sent a message to my kid. My kid's a sophomore in college. I said, I learned a new expression that I think is hilarious. She said, "What is it?" I said, "Bricked up." And she started laughing. She's like, "Jesus Christ, Dad. I learned that in high school. Where have you been?" I'm like, "Shit, I don't know. She laughed. She thought it was funny. And I was like, "I love this new expression,
sure
bricked
she
up."
She loves learning
I'm like,
those
oh,
kind of
Jesus
expressions
Jesus Christ,
from
Dad. Leave me alone. Stop DMing me. God.
Yeah,
what's the matter with you? But that is hilarious. Speaking of like the DM, I legitimately stay the fuck away from the DMs. Like, I hate texting. I hate DMs. And the reason why I hate texting and DMs is because a lot of times you just can't. It's just too much time passing. Like sometimes, like if you and I have something to talk about, I'll call you instead of texting just because it gets everything out on the floor. It gets everything. But like DMs become like, depending on what you say, all of a sudden it's just like way more time spent responding to people. Like, well, why did you say that? Or what do you mean by that? Or it's just like, a phone call would make everything easier. But the problem is with DMs. I'm not fucking calling any of you. I mean, number two. But one of the things, back to Steve, one of the things that was like, you know, we were talking about how social media has been amazing and the knife making community is awesome. I mean, there's a, right now there's an auction. Our friend Greg Sims has two of Steve's knives that he had. Greg had a little showroom and he had a couple knives. Steve put of his knives in the showroom.
Yep.
And he's auctioning them off and the proceeds are going to go to Steve's GoFundMe, and Greg's doing a good job. That's a really, really nice thing to do. And I was you know, talking about, you know, I was trying to post as much as I can. I feel like, you know what, if you have the ability to like echo the help, a lot of people, you know, you never know. I mean, like, I got a message from my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law doesn't know Steve, and she saw my post, and she's just like, I just put in a couple of bills, you know, and it was just like a nice thing, and you never know who's going to – I saw some of my customers came and got involved with the GoFundMe, and it's really nice. Mm-hmm. And you start to see, like, wow, social media, regardless of how you feel about it, it has a really great, you know, reach and great opportunity for something special. Yeah. But then you go to fucking Facebook, and I don't know what the fuck is going on with Facebook and why it's so different than Instagram, considering it's they're both owned by the same goddamn guy. Is I posted a GoFundMe on my you know, personal page, and it turned into like this feeding frenzy for scammers.
Oh Jesus!
There must be some algorithm or some of these scam
on your
guys.
Personal page?
On my personal page.
Who are these people following?
Dude, no, it were strangers. They're not following me. So it was, and my page is public. I don't have,
I see.
So I don't know what it is, but like I saw all of a sudden people are like, oh, this is great. I shared this to my WhatsApp. Can you reach out to me? And I'm looking, I look at the profile and it's like not a person in the name, you know, all these fake names are so bad. It's just like, you know, Nancy Lancy or something stupid. You know, it's just it's a bull. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, these are like the worst. This is not a human being possible. And then you look at their profile and it's just like, you know, they did everything and it's all like AI made. And all of a sudden I started realizing there's like five scammers who are trying. Oh, did you hear that? This is the article about it. The accident. And I'm just like, you got to get rid of it. I scrubbed the whole thing. And I was just like, no matter how good people are, there's such low levels of scum in this world that it's like, it is still stunning to me.
Sure.
Yeah. So I had to get rid of it. I was just like, fuck you, Facebook. I'm not going to be part of your feeding frenzy. And I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to, like, sometimes a guy will write something. You'll see a name with a lot of, you know, numbers, and they're just like, they'll ask you something specific. And you're just like, bro, I'm not spending minutes with you. I'm not spending minutes with you at all.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us all about your grinder there, big guy?
I got a Broadback grinder. I'm very happy with my Broadback. I use it all the time. I'm going to be using it actually on this handle that I got coming up. But I love it because it's really just such an incredibly versatile tool. They have so many different tool arms. They have all these different packages for different budgets or whatever you got going on. And the tools and equipment are cross-platform. So maybe you already got a chassis, but you needed a certain type of tool arm. You don't have a buffing arm attachment. Guess what? You can go get one from them, and it'll likely work on your machine. If not, they can help work to get you set up so that it can. Broadback, those guys are really... They're really good guys. They're knife makers designing a tool for the knife making industry. Love hanging out with Ryan and seeing those guys and Vince at Maker Camp. And they're just great dudes. And so if you want to get or need some equipment, make sure you don't talk to your insurance company first.
But Jesus Christ, let's not go back to that.
Go to broadbackironworks.com at checkout. Make sure you use Knife Talk 10 and get all the stuff that you need. And they're going to save you 10% when you check out. And again, just showing love and support for those guys. Again, they've been making these great tools for our industry. And if you go to, again, broadbackironworks.com, make sure you use Knife Talk 10 at checkout. And you'll save yourself some money and you'll get yourself some great tools.
One more thing, a nice feedback. This is actually a great idea, is from Coda Blade Co. Coda Blade Co. He's our guy. He says, I have a great idea for a segment called Knife Hacks. Even if you've all talked about some of these topics in the past, some newer viewers may not have heard them. Mm. Plus, we're always learning and experienced makers. And even experienced makers can learn new ways to change the way they do things. So, I'd love to hear some more knife hacks. So if you're listening to this and you want to submit your knife hacks, you can go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can DM us your knife hacks. I gave a knife hack. I use a slack belt, and I have a piece of wood with some Scotch-Brite and some tape, and I push the belt from behind into a little part of the knife. It's really, really cool. It's a great little way to kind of go.
So are you doing that with a Scotch-Brite belt?
No, it's usually with like a
J-Flex or something.
Yeah, J-Flex are the best. I mean, you try to flex a 36-grit belt, I mean, it's like trying to flex a chainsaw, for Christ's sakes. But like those, you know, 220 belts and even 800 belts are really great, especially for like if we're getting ready to, we finish the knife and we're about to hand finish the knife. I want to make sure that when I'm doing on a full tang knife, I want to make sure that all the scratches are out of the steel part. And sometimes you need to give a little bit of gusto in a 220 or an 800. I mean, usually an 800, I can really kind of push it, and because it's a J flex, it really kind of pushes in, and right. I'm able to kind of get. I never use it for grinding edges, grinding bevels. I always use it for, it's usually for like finishing up handle scale or something like that.
I gotcha.
So, yeah. Do you have any knife hacks you want to throw in while we're starting off?
Oh boy, where to start?
Give us something simple. Something simple.
Something simple?
Yeah.
Oh boy, what the fuck? I can't think right now.
All
right,
that's okay. That's fine.
Sorry.
No problem. So, think about it for next week.
Okay.
Think about it for next week.
All right.
Let's hit another question, and we'll get the hell out of here.
All right, sounds good. Let's see. Well, we got our gold star listener, Mr. Paul Jansen, says,
right.
I've been seeing a lot of single bevels recently. Is there any culinary advantage to this, or is it just new trendy thing? What do you think?
I would love to hear your answer, because part of me, I you know, the funny thing is I've always been very conscious to say and do what I know and not pretend like I know something that I don't.
Do you mean like the knife reviewers?
I mean, listen, you know what? I would have a lot more faith in them if they weren't so full of shit. You know, it's just like if they would just say, I don't know enough about it. You know, the crazy part is it would be if you're a knife reviewer and you don't know something, why don't you call a knife maker? And then you can at least say, we used to do that on this podcast when there was a question we didn't have an answer for and we had time. I would reach out to someone who knows.
Yeah.
And then at least you're saying, I don't know, but I reached out to someone else and this is what they said.
Yeah.
But they don't. So my opinion on single bevels is I think that I'm imagining it's like, you know, one side's flat and then one side's flat and then it breaks. And like the traditional Japanese deba, which is like a fish knife. And it's funny because most Americans, when they see it, they think it's just a chopper. But it's really for breaking down fish. Mm-hmm. It's one side's flat and then it breaks. And then I bought one thinking that it was but when I was in culinary school, I bought one thinking I was going to be cool. And I'd chop a carrot with it, and it flew off the side of the table. I mean, I was like, I can get a straight cut if you asked for one.
Yeah.
So my opinion is I don't do them, so I don't have enough to say about them, except for I'm sure that they have some sort of job to do that I'm not aware of.
Sure. Yeah, so the single bevels, I don't know how many other people are doing them. I will say, just to start out, that single bevels come from Asian tradition of sword, or not sword making, but knife making, and they've been around for hundreds of years, if not longer. And honestly, if you think about it, it's like the most basic form is basically you take a flat bar and you grind a chisel edge on it, and you got your fucking knife. But like Jeff was saying, like I've seen people, fishmongers or videos of fishmongers using these Debas to break down fish, and it's fucking impressive.
Totally just, different than like us using a fillet knife.
Yeah, they're blasting through those fucking things.
And they're thick as hell, like almost like, you know, 3/16 quarter of an inch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and a lot of those knives, they do have a very specific style, like even a sushi knife, like a traditional sushi knife. Now, it's not perfectly flat on the back, on the bottom side, but it is essentially a single bevel knife. A lot of those, again, what's different about like a Japanese the Japanese and other Asian cultures and how they use their knives is each knife has like one or two jobs, which is why they have 20 fucking different knives. Where in I guess more Western philosophy, European and American, like we're trying to find one fucking knife to do basically everything.
Right.
And so I think when it comes to the single bevels, I think they're cool. I've used them. Neil Komimura has been playing with single bevels as chef's knives, so it's kind of a little bit of a blend of the Western and Eastern traditions. It is definitely neither, honestly. It's its own unique kind of combination of the two, but fuck, they cut like crazy. But along with that comes a certain level, another level of kind of like delicacy in regards to taking care of the edge and the bevel and stuff like that when you're using the knife or the user is using the knife, and how delicate that edge can be. You can get that same thin edge on a more Western style knife that's ground 50-50 bevel. But the way that, like, especially the way Neil's been making them is that on what would be kind of the chisel bevel side, the right side, is that it affords you, there's more mass of the blade on that side, while so the left side's basically perfectly flat, the right side's got more volume or mass, and that can allow you to actually get more aggressive S grinds and stuff like that into the blade. I think it cuts great, it works, but I think one thing that is, I'm not, and this is just in general, super excited about when it comes to single bevels, is that they are not ambidextrous. So if I sell a knife to a right-handed user and I sell them a single bevel, that's great, but then that limits them to this a right-handed user market. Now, right, there are a lot of right-handed users. Now, vice versa, if I do it for a left-handed person, it's great for that left-handed person, but then that left-handed person is very limited on who they can sell that knife to in the future if they decide they want to sell the knife on that secondary market. And so I think they're interesting. I'll probably make some myself, and I've had some people who want some more traditional like single bevels, like Debas and stuff like that, and I would love to make like a sashimi knife or Yanagiba. But I, you know, there's a lot that goes into making those in a more traditional manner, and I just haven't taken the time to do that. And so I guess bilateral grinding or, you know, 50-50 grinding is probably going to be the way I stick with. But I don't think it's a like any weird trend. I really haven't seen a lot of people outside of Neil doing it. I'm sure there are some people who are trying it. I've seen some stuff that looks like it's a single bevel. Like our friend Benjamin Camone does, what is it, the J grind, he calls it. But essentially, he's got a, but it's not perfectly flat on one side. He's basically doing a convex grind, a symmetrical convex grind, but then he's only coming in to one side with kind of like the food release aspect of any kind of compound geometry of any kind, whether it's an S grind or a B grind or a J grind or whatever the fuck you want to call it. You know, there's a few guys out there doing all kinds of compound geometries. And when you do it just from one side, you can get more aggressive with that food release quality. But again, it is, you're limiting that secondary market potentially of who that knife can be sold to.
When somebody's making anything with like hollow grinds and grinds, this food release grinds,
sure,
part of me wants to see their passport and ID. I want to see some sort of license. I want to know. I feel like I've seen so many got a alphabet grinds that I'm just like, show me your paperwork. I want to see some licenses here, mister. What kind of bullshit is that? You don't know how to cook. Get the fuck out of here. Part of me is like that. I just I see some things in my like I wasn't going to say spidey sense, but it's just like I have no spidey sense. I really am terrible at guessing anything. But I feel like I really want – I'm just like, yeah, this motherfucker couldn't cook. What is he worried about his alphabet grinds? I'm not talking about Ben Camone, who I love. Fucking guy's great.
But you are.
No. He's my guy. He's like he's my guy. I have him on full blast all the time. He's hilarious. He's such a good dude. I want to see some. Part of me wants to see some more. I want to see some licenses, guys. Show me a license. I'm gonna tell. Are you locked in or not?
Watch out, Jeff. He's the geometry police. Now.
I'm gonna be the food release police. That's the name of this episode. The food release police. Because I want to see your license and registration, mister. This is an unsanctioned grind. Food release police. This is a bullshit.
I got you.
However, I will say if I got to write that down, I'm never going to remember that. Food release police. Right?
Perfect.
So I tried to do an S grind once, and I was just like, this is a wreck. And it made me want to stop. But the one thing one of my favorite looking visual grinds is when Fingal Ferguson made a Granton edge on a piece of damascus steel.
Yeah.
And the coolest part was wherever those little Granton edges are, those little ovular dots in a certain pattern right underneath, and apparently they're supposed to make. There's some food release or whatever.
Yeah.
But the beautiful part about it was we were able to see the pattern of the damasteel inside the steel. And I thought that was like my favorite way to kind of, you know, see some sort of food release. And if you were to go to damasteel.se, you can use the promo code KnifeTalk10 for 10% off everything at damasteel. We're going to be doing the damasteel invitational again. You can apply to be in the damasteel invitational. It's awesome. Stainless steel, pattern welded steels, all their patterns are great and they're beautiful. And the damasteel invitational is always a good time. The heat treating is very similar to AEBL or lots of stainlesses. It shouldn't be very intimidating to you. And if you want to make something, and you know, Mareko and I and Craig have all said that the future of knife making is pattern welded stainless steel. There's just, people want the patterns and they don't want the mess. They don't want the cleanup.
No,
so go to damasteel.se or follow them at damasteel.damasteelab on Instagram and get yourself involved with that. Food release police.
Yeah.
How come no one said that before? We should have a t-shirt. That's the next t-shirt. I'm never doing that again. T-shirts. Are you kidding me? That was such a mess. Those fucking t-shirt. Whoever company Craig originally hired back in the day with the t-shirts, it was such a disaster.
I still have one.
I have a couple Knife Talk shirts, and we stopped because the companies just weren't sending them to the people I couldn't get one for 2 months. I was like, what the fuck is going on? So,
last thing I will say about those compound grinds is that when you're doing them, while you can afford to go deeper into one face of the blade, you really want to take into consideration the long-term use of that knife and how that grind is going to affect the blade and the effectiveness of that blade over the life of that knife. Because as you sharpen and regrind and materials remove, you're moving further and further up into that cross-section. And you know what happens when you get into a hollow that is only like a half inch or 1 inch hollow and it's right at the fucking edge? What kind of grind are you going to have at that point? So take that in consideration when you're making these, because not only, again, you kind of limit the secondary market and who it's going to, but I've seen some of these grinds and I'm like, fuck, how deep is that? Because I don't know how sustainable that geometry is going to be over the life of that knife.
This shit is like a ladle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you got to grind too much from the backside, the non-hollow ground side, then you potentially are pushing into those hollows if they're super deep, and it could really fuck some shit up real fucking quick.
Yeah, it's I mean, look what it, what's going to be what it's going to be. I think we should leave. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, before we, well, we're going to do a couple minutes of the after show, but last but certainly not least, last but certainly not least, go to, if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, there's a direct link in our bio to help our friend Steve Pellegrino's GoFundMe. If you any money is, $5 is good, lots of bucks is good, no bucks is fine. If you can, you know, share, be the echo chamber. He's going to need a lot of help over the years. Well, let's go short term for first, and he's going to need a lot of help, and his family's going to need a lot of help, and this has been great. And you know, whatever we can do for Steve, you know, we got his back like he had ours. So with that said, let's go to the after show.
Goodbye.
I saw, we went to the Led Zeppelin movie last night.
There's a Led Zeppelin movie?
It was a documentary.
Oh.
It was amazing.
I'm a huge fan of Led Zeppelin.
This was such a great, it was called Becoming Led Zeppelin. And my wife loves Led Zeppelin, and we hadn't gone to a movie in years, so we were just like, it was a weird weekend, and with everything was going on with Steve, I was just like, yeah. I was just like, ugh. So we decided to go to see, it's called Becoming Led Zeppelin. Phenomenal movie. And one of the most amazing parts of the movie was Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones were like, as young people, they were session musicians.
Right.
That means they were hired to play on at like 15. They were like professional musicians at 15.
That's pretty wild.
It's wild. You know what the wildest thing is? They both played on the Goldfinger song. You know the original Goldfinger song? Goldfinger, da, 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 the James Bond movie.
Okay,
they both were on that.
That was great.
At like 15.
Wow.
But it's really cool I was super inspired, and the cool thing was, it was really cool. And all of a sudden, I always thought that Robert Plant was like the guy who ran the whole thing. Jimmy Page is a goddamn genius. And the inspiring part was he was so locked in from day one, since he was a child. And even when they started Led Zeppelin, he and John Paul Jones had so much experience before they started the Yardbirds, and then it turned into Led Zeppelin. But it was so inspiring because it was just like what we always talk about, the fact that experience is underrated.
For sure.
Both of them were like real professional musicians. They could read music. They weren't just a bunch of loaf arounds. And they just made Led Zeppelin. I have such a huge different opinion on Led Zeppelin than after this movie.
Yeah. Jimmy Page, by the way, was the lead guitarist, and John Paul Jones was the bassist, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was amazing. And I've always heard that, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Howard Stern used to say forever he'd have people come on and he'd ask famous musicians what their favorite who the best drummer was, and he would always say that John Bonham was always the
Bonham
best.
Is so fucking good.
He was amazing, and even if you're not a Led Zeppelin fan, it was amazing, and it's in the theaters. It sounded great, and I was shocked that I didn't fall asleep. I was shocked that I wasn't bored at all. I was like, I found it to be very inspiring, frankly.
The drum solo on Moby Dick is fucking rad. He's doing like double bass sound playing between the toms and the bass drum. It sounds like metal today, like metal, whatever, music, metal music. They use a lot of double bass, like just slamming out, right? But he was doing that before there was a double bass kick. And so he was fucking, yeah, that's still one of my most favorite songs of
you'll love this documentary.
Led Zeppelin 3 is my most favorite album.
They only get to just past Led Zeppelin 2. And the interesting thing is that when they interview they have John Paul Jones, and he says that he the cool thing was is John Paul Jones and Jimmy Page were like, we want all the four of us to have our voice. And they were playing in between each other, and John Paul Jones and John Bonham were kind of playing notes in between each other, so they could kind of like have this kind of relationship. It was amazing, and it was really, really a great movie, and it was inspiring as a creative person, because when Jimmy Page kind of started Led Zeppelin, he had the experience of being a professional musician behind him.
Right.
So all of a sudden he was able to effectively express himself because he had all this, you know, experience behind him. It's kind of like, you know, when we talk about knife making, people make one knife and all of a sudden they want to go to business. And the thing is like this whole concept of repetition and being locked in and obsessed allowed them to really kind of make very avant-garde music at the time. But it was really like when they first played, it really sounded very avant-garde. I would imagine back in the 67, 68, 69, you would think, who the fuck are these guys? But then it just became really so undeniable. It was a great, great documentary.
Yeah. Well, and there's something kinda they do really well that I don't know how many other bands really do, or if they do it as well. But at a certain point, especially in the first few albums, you'll start with one song, and then like halfway through, it transitions to almost a completely different song, like musically speaking, like the sound of the actual song. And then it transitions back at the end, and they do it so seamlessly. It's really interesting because it feels like you're getting more music than you would normally get. Where like most songs, you know, you got the main chord progression, the verse, and the shit kind of just repeats back and forth throughout the whole song, and the song's done.
Well,
they like completely switch it up, and then they bring it back, I don't know how novel that was, but I that's still something today that when I hear their music, I'm like, fuck, that's so interesting, because I don't feel like I hear that a lot, or if I do hear it, I don't know if it's done as well as that.
Well, they talk about the fact that they had a guy who was their manager who was basically keeping, he was like, they called him like the Mafia Don. And they kept all the this guy would keep everybody away from the band, like all the album people and the producers and everybody. So no one had access to the four of them, and they were able to kind of make what they wanted. And the other thing they were talking about was at the time, people were making singles, and they realized that in the United States, when FM radio came, they're playing AM singles, but FM radio. These kind of underground FM at the time was very underground. They were playing whole album sides. So they really wanted that's when they really wanted to not make singles, but they wanted to make an album, and the songs kind of like had a relationship. Yeah. And it was really, he says, because then the FM radio stations would play the whole album. So it's just like, it was really great. And I have a giant, giant respect for Jimmy Page. Jimmy Page really was the moving factor on Led Zeppelin, and it was really, really kind of cool to see.
He still performs today too, which is kind of fucking crazy.
He looks like he's in pretty good shape. I mean, I always thought that Led Zeppelin was like in the early 70s, but it was really not. I mean, they were playing in the 50s. Well, Led Zeppelin was playing in the middle 60s, so
yeah,
it was really cool.
Yeah, they've been around for a while.
All right, well, go see it. I think we've done enough, don't you think?
Get it.
All right, guys, listen. We're going to see you next week with the big man's coming back, sending good vibes to Craig Lockwood. Get you whatever you need to get. Help you feel better. We hope you feel better. And once again, go support our guy, Steve Pellegrino, and he will give you the shirt off your back. He will give you the shirt off your back. And that's what we're going to do. We will give you the shirt off your own back. All right, guys. Miracco, thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
For sure.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.